Are we starting?
Yes, we're starting.
So there's been a lot of criticism of the Apple TV. You've been part of it. You've been on podcasts talking about it. There's been a ton of other podcasts and blogs about it. And one of the consistent themes is a lot of people are criticizing the controller, the UI, the onboarding experience. And do you want to summarize kind of the current state of things?
Sure, since I'm a mean jerk. There have been, I guess you could say it's a little polarizing in terms of, like, if you go read some reviews, they're like glowing. And if you go read some reviews, they're like, hey, you guys should do a better job at this stuff because you're Apple. Honestly, it's not like it's the worst product Apple's ever shipped in its entire existence or anything along those lines. It's still a totally functional device. I have not returned mine. And I know that you still have one and you haven't returned it yet. It's not that people like want this thing to burn off the face of the earth. But the criticism has largely centered around, like you're saying, the UI, the remote, I would say the connected experience with other Apple services and devices. I would also say around how much of a benefit it is over its competitors in this streaming space. These are things that people criticized it for. The long lead up to this, and then sort of the rocky launch that it experienced. With a product that doesn't seem completely finished. These are all valid criticisms that people can have towards it. And I did mention them on Upgrade, and some people wrote in mostly to Mike and Jason, who were nice enough to have me on and never again, received all of the mail. Some people said nice things, which I appreciate, because I like it when people say nice things about me. It's I know it's unusual for human beings, but it's one of those traits about me that I think really sets me apart. Is that
that your desire to be liked?
Yeah. Then there are those that wrote in and said things like I was obviously on to get like a youthful demographic or whatever, which doesn't make any sense because I'm like older than Mike. That's the thing. And I know that a lot of the criticism we had was also truncated by the amount of time we had to discuss it. I needed to go to work, so I wasn't going to be there all morning. We obviously did not go through every aspect of the interface. It was not an exhaustive review. I wrote something longer on my site, I feel like we also pointed out some of the positives, and I feel like many reviews have pointed out the positive aspects, especially surrounding Siri. It has its shortcomings, of course, just the fact that it's there at all prevents you from having to type using that horrible keyboard thing that they made.
So before we get too deep into features, one of the things you're bringing up is the feedback you guys were getting based on your criticism of it. And I think that's one of the interesting themes of all the news that's been going around, because before I got one, like, it seemed like everybody was on the Apple TV.
Okay. I remember specifically when I had one before you did, and I sent you my reactions, and then you were like sending me back reviews other people had where they said that they were having a positive experience. And then I was like, sure, whatever. And then you got one, and then you wrote me back and you were like, actually, this is terrible. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the interesting things that's happened in, it's actually a really, really good device with just a bunch of really, really bad experiences that pile up.
Yeah. And
I think that's what's missing in everyone who's been talking about it, because everyone just hears the negative and they miss it. It's a really good device, but we're only going to talk about the bad stuff because it's really, really grating.
I would say the reverse is more often the case. I don't know if you've heard the podcast. Gruber has done two podcasts now with Guy English and with Sandwich, who Adam Lissagore. And both of those have been very positive about the Apple TV. And there are other review sites and stuff, like The Verge gave it a 9.0 out of 10. So obviously people have warm feelings towards it. And I don't want to dampen those, except to point out that it's a company where we expect the details to be right. And that when the details are not right, I feel like it is very fair to criticize them, because that's the whole point of an Apple product, is that it's a magical, ethereal, amazing device that comes to you in a perfect way and has all these details executed brilliantly across the board. And you're like, what an amazing thing. And I don't feel that way about interacting with the Apple TV. I don't feel like the details are right. I feel like the details are either missing or in like something that would have been a cool demo that I don't see it as like someone had this in their home and used it for a prolonged period of time. Like that's how I feel about the detail level. So I don't feel like everyone's being unnecessarily negative about it. And I certainly react very strongly against people who say, oh, you should say nicer things about the Apple TV. Cause it's like, well, you know what? The nicer things I can say is that it is a TV device that hooks up to my TV, and it is fast at getting some of the streams off of the internet and then showing those on the TV. That doesn't, and the app experience allows for more flexibility over the previous generation, but that doesn't mean necessarily that it's the best streamer for everyone. If I knew someone who wasn't in the iTunes ecosystem and they were like, should I get an Apple TV? I'd be like, I don't think you would get much benefit out of having an Apple TV if you're not in the iTunes ecosystem. If someone is like heavy into Amazon Video, it's not going to get them anything to be an Apple TV user.
See, I found kind of a different experience, because a couple of my friends were down for the weekend when I got the Apple TV, and they are not in the Apple ecosystem. They both have Android devices. They subscribe to Amazon Prime. And they're really interested in the device because it has Netflix, it has CBC News, and it has games. And they were like, how much is this? Should I buy one? And that was just from them using it over a weekend.
So
I think there's like two ways of looking at it.
Netflix is not a differentiating factor on any platform as far as I'm concerned. And the Netflix app that's in the Apple TV is very similar to the Netflix app that is inside of the Fire TV. So if they are heavy into the Amazon ecosystem for any reason, that's also something to consider. The Fire TV, that one also has plays games and comes with a bundled game controller.
But the quality of games is quite different.
There's still like Android games that are on your TV, and we have iOS games that are on your TV, basically.
Yeah, that's another topic we can drill into.
Okay, well, I don't want to distract from it. I'm just saying, if someone were to ask me to recommend this to them and they were not in the Apple ecosystem, then I would probably not recommend it. If someone like is frustrated with their third generation Apple TV, then I'd be like, okay, sure, upgrade, because I feel like this is an improvement over the previous model in many ways. It has like a couple of things where it walks that back, where certain parts of the interaction are clunkier or weirder or don't work quite like you would expect them to. That scrolling through a list is actually kind of annoying, in my opinion. I know that there's differing opinions on that. A lot of people are like, scrolling through lists is great because I just swipe my finger all the time. And I'm like, but I don't want to keep swiping my finger. I would just like to hold down.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are those things. And I also saw like there was a piece on 9to5Mac about one of their writers. It feels like the third generation Apple TV is better than the fourth generation Apple TV. And I would say that it's probably not an argument I would make. And I want to be very clear that I'm not saying that the third generation Apple TV is good. To say that there is no improvement and that it's primarily a cosmetic difference, as the article implied, I would never go that far. I certainly feel like there is a difference between the two platforms, and that it would be an upgrade if somebody is really itching to get rid of the third gen device.
Yeah, I think I have a very different view. I think it's a substantial upgrade. I think it's really early in the life cycle, and I would definitely recommend it to tons of people, but not yet. And I think that's maybe where there's some nuance in our difference.
Well, I'm talking about right now. You can't say you would recommend it, but not yet, because I would recommend it later if it was better. What kind of distinction is that?
It's like, wait for a point release and then buy it, is what I've been saying to people.
Okay, well,
it's like when there is a software update, go
there,
buy it.
There was a software update. There was 9.0.1, which did something, but...
Did that install itself? Is that why mine's not crashing?
I don't know. It depends on your settings. It comes with automatic updates enabled, but mine had not automatically downloaded it as of yesterday, and so I downloaded it myself manually. Depending on when you set yours up and it searched for an update, it might have got it by itself. There were no release notes for it, so I can't even tell you if it was supposed to address anything. I would assume bug fixes, but that doesn't necessarily mean that I know what those bugs were that it was fixing. Yeah.
I'm just checking right now. 9.0.1.
Okay, so yours did update automatically. There's a point release out there now, as we speak, which came a week after the device shipped. So that's interesting in terms of like the software development that's going on and still going on.
But that's kind of happened with all of their major software releases lately.
I don't think that's a good thing. I think that things should ship when they're ready, and that when things ship and they're not ready, and that there are point releases that that trail along behind them, I don't find that comforting.
I find it more comforting that there's a point release in a week than we have to wait till 9.1 in 3 months.
But that's not the distinction I'm making. I'm just saying.
I know what you're saying. But.
Yeah, I was saying if they're having bugs and there are problems, they should fix them and then ship the device. I don't mean like a little bug. I mean like they're bugs. To get on a more positive note, where I'm not just saying horrible things and being the worst person in the world, I would just like to say that it has a lot of potential, this device, and that as shipped, the hardware fit and finish is very good. I feel the design of certain aspects of the hardware are not going to be able to be upgraded. So that's a little annoying because I feel like there are flaws there, but the software can certainly be upgraded, and that over time, I'm sure the software will get much better because I don't really see that going backwards. And when it does mature more, then it is quite possible that I would recommend this device to other people. But at $159, being the most expensive streaming set-top box you can buy, other than the Sony 4K streaming home theater player thing, which is, I think, is like $500 still or something like that. Other than that, this is the most expensive streaming device that you can get. So I feel like it needs to be worth every penny for me to recommend it. And I'm going to hold that recommendation until it is improved. Unless you are somebody who is, I would say, more like us, and then would be on the page with upgrading. I'm not recommending to my sister or my mom or anything. I even suggested to my boyfriend that I give him the extra one that because of the shipping shenanigans. long story. Listeners, I had bought mine through the online order process when it wasn't clear when in-store availability would be on the Monday. And then by Wednesday, there was a rumor that it was going to be available in stores Friday, but it was still not reflected on Apple's website. And I tried to cancel my order anyways because I figured the rumor was probably correct. And that was not cancelable because it was in preparing to ship mode. Then come Friday, it's available in store and you can go get it, but my shipment still hadn't shipped. And it doesn't ship until that Monday. So that's really terrible timing on Apple's part. And I wish they had really been clear if they knew it was going to be in stores on that Monday of the week, by Friday, then I really wish they had communicated that better to people so that they wouldn't have bought it online if they didn't need to, because that first package never materialized for me. and customer care with Apple service, like calling up. Well, first I had to call the shipping provider and they were not helpful. And they told me I had to call Apple. Apple, I was just like, you know, I just want to know what happened to it. Like if it's, you know, just if it's vanished into the ether because of some unscrupulous person, then that's not really anybody's fault. So I'm totally willing to eat it. But they went ahead and shipped me another one free of charge by FedEx, a more reputable carrier. And it arrived. It was totally fine. And so and now I have two. And I was going to return the second one anyways. But I tried to give it to Jason. I was like, here, I'll give it to you. I won't even charge you for it. I just want to have like another one around. And he's like, no, I don't want it in my house. Save $150. And I was like, but you have it. And then he'd be like, no, but I already have an Apple TV. And I was like, no, there's a difference. There's a difference. And I tried to play games with him and explain this to him when he came over to my place. And I was just like, look, Crossy Road and stuff. And he's just like, this is a really stressful game. So it's, he's not an example of most people in the world, I would say. I hope he can come around on that, because it would be nicer to have it there instead of his old Apple TV, which I feel is just as unreliable and ancient as my own third gen that I got rid of.
You should just swap it and see if he notices.
He wouldn't, but then he would be angry if he ever turned it on.
But he can just use the old remote, so he won't even notice.
Oh, the remote. Do we want to talk about the remote?
I really want to talk about the remote.
Okay. So, people, I know I was just trying to say I was going to be positive about things like a minute ago, but there's something bad to say, and that is that I don't quite like the remote very much. It is kind of exactly like in my mind it is what I had pictured when I knew that they were going to have like a touch remote, like just like a stick with a big pad that you drag your thumb around on. And it is that, only it's kind of not quite exactly what I imagined, because there are some parts of it that I feel are a little worse than I would have anticipated. And there are some parts of it that are better than I would have anticipated.
Parts of it that are better.
Well, let's just say I was imagining it would be a little more uncomfortable than it was. It is still uncomfortable to hold, but most people, when I say that criticism to them, they're like, who holds remotes? Like they apparently like live in some museum where they pick it up off of like a podium and then they use the remote and then they put it back down on the podium, and they always orient it correctly on the podium and they always look at it. And I'm like, who uses a remote like that? You people get real. But the device, as shipped, is a slab of glass on one side and metal on the other, and it is a rectangular prism with rounded corners, and it has one clicky surface, and it has a set of buttons. And while there is some minor difference in the shape of the buttons, like when I had said that the buttons are basically the same, and I think Jason Snell and Mike Hurley had agreed with me, like you can't really tell. There was some criticism about that. We're like, oh, well, you can tell it's different because there's a slight indentation on the Siri remote thing. And then you can tell it's different because the volume ones are a pill instead of, you know, or a lozenge shape instead of two circles. And it's like, I don't know the last time anyone else has held a remote, but there's a very big difference when you pick it up and you feel the buttons on a normal remote, because by touch, you can tell where volume is, where the channel buttons are, you can tell where the D-pad is, like just by touch, just with your thumb, you can tell. And you don't even have to push anything or trigger a function on the device. And with the Siri remote, if you touch a certain end of it at all, you will move the playhead or you will move your selection on the screen. And so I feel like that is a very flawed design. And when we say that it's too similar and too symmetrical, I feel like that criticism still holds up, regardless of the minor differences that are present in the tiny little divot and the fact that the two circles are joined together into one shape instead of being two circles.
Yeah, I have a similar but different set of problems with it. I hate this remote. I think it's completely stupid. I don't know why you put glass on something that lives in the living room.
But, oh, well, The glass thing I find entertaining. There were some news reports that the remotes are shattering for people. And I saw some reactionary Apple fans saying, oh, of course the glass is shattering. And I'm like, how can you say that? Like, common sense wise, like, of course the glass is shattering. That's like, what you do is you say, of course glass shatters, don't make a remote out of glass. You don't say, of course glass shatters, all these idiots dropping all the remotes. Anyway, yeah. Continue.
Yeah. Anyway, so my experience actually using the remote and fumbling for it in the dark, I haven't had the scrubbing problem everyone seems to have, but I always, always hit the Siri button when I mean to hit menu.
Oh, I don't have that problem. Although sometimes I hit menu and it doesn't do what I think it's going to do and I have to hit the home button.
Yeah. And like, that's another thing. Like, I think on the last episode of the talk show, it was either Gruber or Adam Lisagor suggested putting the home button at the bottom, which would have made total sense. But the other thing is the home button always takes you back to the home screen, but it's also the power button. The menu button is always back, but at some point back becomes home. But in games, menu is pause, and yeah. Play pause is A.
Yeah.
And it's just like completely overloaded.
Yeah. Well, the thing is it's overloaded and none of it is intuitive. Another feature of the home button that you didn't bring up right now is that it also is the multitasking switcher.
There's multitasking?
You didn't know this?
No.
Double press it.
Please hold. Turning it back on. I turned it off in case it was using the Wi-Fis.
Yeah, it's got to download those aerial screensavers.
I have that set to daily. I love those.
I think mine's still on monthly because I just keep seeing San Francisco, Manhattan, and the stupid clouds. The clouds are the worst. I wish there was a way to say, never show me this one.
Oh, today I had the Great Wall of China and then an aerial view of London.
Ah, that's nice. So anyway, has it restarted?
So double press? Oh.
How did you read all the reviews and listen to all these podcasts? You didn't know that.
I've been busy.
Yeah, well, anyway, it's not obvious. I think that that's... it's not a brilliantly executed feature, especially since
it's also really slow.
Yeah. It's kind of funny if you have a bunch of TVML apps open, because it's showing you a version of the screen for each of those apps. And if they're all TVML apps, they're all black with a great bar on the top. So it's not a distinguishing feature, as you go through the list. It's weird. But anyway, so the button is overloaded in terms of what it can do. It is not intuitive about what it does. It doesn't say home on it like the menu button says menu. It just has a sort of TV
menu is
icon.
Back. It's not menu.
What?
Menu is back.
I know, but it doesn't actually have anything descriptive on it. The TV icon that they put on it. The 16x9 rectangle and then a little stand underneath it. That doesn't mean anything. What is that supposed to mean? It doesn't even look like the iconography that you would expect of a home button on an Apple device. For a long time, Apple devices had that little round rect that was inside the circle. It's not that. It doesn't seem to indicate what it's really doing. And like you're saying with the menu button, sometimes menu or home will take you back, and sometimes you have to hit home to get back, and menu won't do anything. Like when Disney Infinity tries to load and then freeze and hang on trying to load internet assets, then you can't hit menu to get back out of it like you can in a TVML app. You have to push the home button. So it's ridiculous because it's not clear what you're pushing on the remote at all times. And you're just sort of mashing things until something triggers the way that you want it to. If you're ever not sure how to get back to the home screen, you can always push down Siri and say, take me to the home screen. and she will do it. It'll do it. And the volume buttons, though, are probably the most intuitive and correctly functioning aspect of it, which I find personally entertaining because those are the ones where they're like, we give up. We can't overload this button to make it do a bunch of other things. We'll just make it a volume button. And sure enough, it's a volume button.
Yeah, that part bugs me a bit, especially as it comes to gaming. And I think remote is a good segue into that. because they mm-hmm. have like one button of the buttons that you can use for games, which is play. And like when you're holding the remote sideways, you aren't going to trigger IR for volume on your TV. So like, why can't you use those?
But you're not always holding it sideways in all of the games. Yeah. And I would also argue that holding it sideways is not the solution that they think it is.
No, it's definitely not.
Yeah, I think that should never have been put on the table as the answer to this problem. And what I'm talking about when I'm saying that for listeners who aren't familiar is that the Apple TV ships only with the Siri remote and not another form of controller input. So when you're playing games, that all of the games except for one on the App Store are designed to work with it. Guitar Hero is the sole exception that can require a Bluetooth accessory and not work with the Siri remote. That's it. Everybody else has to work with the Siri remote. Now, the Siri remote is not a good game input for most games. There are iOS games that have been ported to the TV where it works fine. And those are generally the ones where you're holding the remote in sort of, I guess, portrait mode, like vertically. And you can use it more or less in kind of a iPhone-esque kind of a way where you're swiping and then pushing, sort of tapping or clicking. And it can register taps. That mechanic is not like the worst. Like there are some cases, Mike Curley had complained that when you're clicking, like there's actually a little bit of a delay, like when you're jumping in Alto's Adventure, that he would prefer if it was just tap to jump.
That one I like that it's click to jump.
Okay.
Because I find like when I was playing that, I just rest my thumb on the remote and click. And if it was tapping, it would be weird.
Yeah. I mean, I've played enough of it to know that I prefer it on my iPhone to the TV.
I love it on the TV. I think it, like that's probably my most used app.
Okay, well, we'll just chalk that one up to personal preference.
That's what this whole thing is about.
Our difference on that, I'm chalking up to personal preference. Not that it is necessarily good or bad.
I meant yeah. like the TV in general.
Oh no, but the then the horizontal remote games, the ones where they are. Things that are not necessarily designed around the notions of iOS, things where controllers are more common. They're designed basically to use something that is more akin to a traditional controller layout, where there is a D-pad and there are little buttons on the side, and you pick and choose, and you hold it in your hand, and that is not something that ships with the TV. So what they have done is sort of put those controls in a way into the remote in a horizontal position, where the touchpad, when held horizontally, becomes a D-pad underneath your left thumb, and the other buttons, the play, pause, etc., they become your optional buttons. But that's not... it's not comfortable. It's like you're holding a business card and trying to play a game. I don't feel like it is a sufficient area. I don't feel like it is sufficiently seated in your hand. Like the grip is not there. You're holding, you're just a tiny little thing. It's a little tiny thing. And like you're saying with the buttons, like it doesn't make any sense. It like intuitively, like what you're doing, and that not all of the buttons map to game controls in a way that makes sense. And I find that to be unpleasant, and I don't really think that they should have. And this is the part where people have different opinions. Like there are some people who feel like Apple should have shipped a game controller, period, end of story. And there are some people who feel like they should only turn on the option for apps in the App Store to be able to require a non-Siri remote controller. Right now, it just says like controller optional, that they should be able to enforce their own controls. And Guitar Hero is the only, like I said, only game that has the ability to just completely circumvent that policy. Everybody else is on that policy. And I'm not sure which camp you fall into, whether or not you feel like they should have just shipped a good game controller, a good first party game controller, or if you feel like it should just be the ability to enforce enforce the requirement that someone have their own third party controller.
You didn't get the controller, right?
What?
You didn't get the Nimbus controller?
Oh, I thought you said I got something wrong.
No. You didn't get the controller.
No, I didn't. I did not buy the Steel Series Nimbus officially recommended MFI controller. MFI. Yeah. MF. So the I didn't get it because I was like, it's supposed to work with this, so I didn't.
Yeah, I did, because I listened to all of the people ranting about the remote. I think everyone will agree that outside of one-button games, the Siri remote kind of sucks. Even the motion control within it is terrible. Like, trying to play the Disney X-Wing game with it, like, that doesn't work.
Yeah, I will point out, though, that I'm not sure how properly calibrated the Disney Infinity Battle of Yavin game is.
But there's a few others. Like, there was, I need to go to my home screen. And
the Manticore Rising is the one that comes to mind that I played, where it's something that was specifically designed to take advantage of this. I found it very disorienting and difficult to control using only the orientation of the device, because it just goes forward and you rotate, and that changes the direction. So you're just like spinning your hand trying to figure out which direction to go.
One with paper planes where it's just like as ridiculous to use the accelerometer to control it. And there's a labyrinth game and a bowling game, and they suck.
Yeah.
And it's the controller, not the game.
Maybe there's something they could do in terms of software to better calibrate it, but
if regardless, there's like four games that have poor motion control.
Yeah. But I mean, that still could be the software calibration. I'm just saying that.
But it's Apple's problem, not the developer's problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I got the Nimbus controller thing. I think it's a good controller. I used to play a lot of video games, so it's like, it's fine. It's interesting in that it doesn't have all the same buttons as the TV remote. So it doesn't have a TV button, so you can't use it to turn your TV on. And it doesn't have a Siri button or a microphone, so you can't use Siri on it.
Yep.
So you can't use it as a primary input device, even though it does everything else on your Apple TV. And that sucks, because then you have to keep using the Siri remote.
Yeah, well, and people have pointed this out, like, strangely, the TV interface is designed to work with any D-pad remote or controller. So like with your Nimbus series, you can control the interface on the TV in terms of like moving around on the home screen and selecting things. Now, and I can do that with my Logitech Harmony, or I could program my Samsung remote to do it, or I could program like it can accept my old aluminum stick Apple TV remote. Any of these things are possibilities. And that's one of those things where it's just like, I don't understand why that support is there for all of these other kinds of input. But like, you still need to go back to the Siri input, because all of those other inputs won't have the microphone. And it's sort of annoying to me that it's not the complete replacement that they kind of pitched it as, like, oh, it'll turn on your TV. It's like, well, it doesn't always turn on everyone's TV, and it doesn't always turn on their receivers if they have their audio routed through that sort of thing, that kind of setup. It all depends on HDMI CEC working correctly. And you know, every time you have to go reach for another remote, then it's like, well, you didn't solve it. You didn't solve the problem you specifically said you were going to set out to solve. So I do find that a little frustrating.
Yeah, and I think the extremeness of the frustration is because they got like 95% of the way there. And like, if it was like 20% there, we'd be like, eh, whatever, like we still need dollar remotes. But this is like, I can see how it will work in a future where I only have one remote and one device. And that future looks really, really cool. And we're just like so close, but it's not there.
Yeah. And, you know, there's no capacity right now that I'm aware of for third parties to make their own Siri remotes. Like if somebody just wanted to make a like exactly the SteelSeries Nimbus controller, only it had a Siri button with a microphone. I'm not aware of any capacity for third parties to be able to do that. So it seems like you're just going to need to have a Siri remote no matter what. And if anything bad ever happens to your Siri remote, that's $80.
And I think like they're going to get there. You can see they're kind of laying foundation for this stuff, like with the lack of keyboard support and the rumors of the Focus UI being available on iOS devices. Like, I think everything's all kind of going to a thing. It's just it's not there yet, which comes back to the thing of why did they release this?
Yeah. Oh, well, not to get too far into the why did they release this so early thing, but the keyboard specifically, that is a pain point, especially with the remote, that many people have addressed, that it's difficult to move around and select things on the keys, and it makes the initial setup process very uncomfortable, because you have to do a lot of entry of things on the screen when you are initially setting up the device. You have to do less of that, substantially less of that, once the device has been set up. But you do need to like occasionally search the App Store for something, or sometimes you might say something that Siri gets wrong and you need to go manually enter it, especially like a heavily accented non-English word, or certain proper names. Like when I went to search for Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, and then it spelled it C-O-N and couldn't find anything, not using any context clues from the other part of the word that it got right. But the like having to enter the text on it with the Siri remote is unbearable. I mean, you can bear it, obviously, because I haven't returned it. But
yeah, it's just not good.
No, it's especially since the layout they decided to go with was a horizontal bar, and you have to with all the keys on it, and then there's a row down for other numbers and stuff, and you can push and hold on certain things. It doesn't say that, but you can do that, and then you can get other characters and a backspace. If you want to move from one side to the other side, you have to keep sliding your thumb across it, though.
Yeah, that bothers me a lot.
Yeah.
Like I wish they would have had when you slide over and leave your thumb resting on left or right or up or down. Like it would just be the equivalent of pressing and holding the left or right button.
I completely agree with you. I believe we talked about that last week on iMessage, but I feel like that is probably the thing that I find when I compare this to like a D-pad, I think that is that might be the thing that sticks out to me the most, is that I can't just like hold, like with the D-pad, like sure it's clunky and you go click click click, but you wouldn't click 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 through this whole keyboard. You would click and hold until you got to what you wanted, and then you'd release your thumb. With this, you can't, like you're saying, you can't swipe and then just leave your thumb there and it just keeps going. That would be nice, but then I was trying to think of why they wouldn't have enabled that, since that's basically how it works when you go to fast forward or rewind inside of your player view, when you're like scrubbing through a timeline. Then I was trying to figure out why that's the case, that they wouldn't have implemented that in the interface. And I was on the home screen trying to figure it out, and I was like, oh, if you did that, then you wouldn't have the... because like what happens now is like you swipe and then your thumb is on top of an icon for something, because it doesn't keep going, and then the icon pivots. It's like, oh, you wouldn't have your parallax effect, I guess. And I was like,
no, I think you would, because the parallax only takes like a little bit of input before it slides over.
Yeah, but I mean, it requires your thumb resting, and if every time your thumb rested, you were scrubbing, then you wouldn't have it. But I would gladly trade pivoting tiles for just like a keep moving, keep scrolling and get out of the way kind of a thing. So that is my primary source of frustration with that keyboard, is that you're just constantly swiping over something that is the width of a ruler. It's not even like the kind of touch interfaces that we're used to, because it's so small. It's more like a 1990s trackpad. I don't appreciate having to do that, especially for passwords and stuff where you have to constantly skip around all over the place. So
I think we all agree the keyboard's horrible.
Yeah, and I mean, however Apple chooses to solve this going forward in the future, one possible solution is the device is based on iOS and it ships with Bluetooth support, and that they just have disabled keyboards. So maybe we can hope that in the future they will support it, because like you're saying, Steve Troughton Smith, a developer, had tweeted that he had looked through all the little bundles and found framework for the Focus UI. So maybe there is in there some unfinished thing for controlling the interface with a keyboard. And I know that there was some criticism about this, like a reaction to the criticism of not having keyboard support has been, why would you want a keyboard with your TV? That's terrible. And it's like, not all of the time, but hey, who does, like, so many people have Bluetooth keyboards. It would be nice to be able to enter all your passwords and then get rid of it. Stu Mashwitz, a visual effects director, blah, blah, blah guy, sort of quasi famous on the internet. He had a big conspiracy theory that Apple wouldn't want people to have $150 computers. Because basically if you had keyboard support, you could make like word processors for this thing. I don't necessarily want to use my TV as a word processor, but I guess I could see that point in.
Thing. It's HDMI input. You can buy a 21 inch display that's 1080p, and then there you go.
Yeah. 1080p is not like great these days, but I don't know if you remember this, but back when I think it was the PS2 came out, like they could like put Linux on it, I think. And like, so some countries were using it because it was cheaper to get a PlayStation and put Linux on it than it was to buy computers. So that was some possibilities. Just like, well, maybe, you know, people could get $150 Apple TVs, plug in any old display, like you're saying, and then you have just a tiny little computer. I mean, you could probably even set it up like as a web server if you had like the right apps for it. Everything would need to run in a sandbox, I suppose, or you could just like sideload it all on, which is something that people have been doing. Is the USB-C port allows people to build their little Xcode projects and sideload on whatever apps they want, unlike the previous generation Apple TV, where you had to go through like a whole rigmarole in order to try to get like XMBC on it. And I think you could only do that on like the hard drive Apple TVs back in the day. It's a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So back to the controller.
Oh yeah. I think that they should have made a first party controller. I don't agree with people saying that the real solution is just to allow third-party controller requirements inside of the App Store. I feel like that is a stopgap solution, but they really need to have their own first-party controller, because otherwise there's no standard to measure all of the other controllers against. I mean, there is the official...
That's a different argument, because saying there's a standard to measure controllers against is about quality. The MFI standard is saying what the controller should look and feel and what buttons it has and where they go. And so I think that's useful. I don't think they need to make a controller. It'd be really cool if they made a controller. I would love to listen to John Syracuse tear apart that controller, but they don't need to make one. They need to allow game developers to force a controller, because saying you have the option of 18 buttons or one button and your game has to support both input options is really, really stupid.
But I would say that having people buy an Apple TV that doesn't come with a controller and then putting that in their living room and going to play games on the App Store, and then every app or nearly every requiring a controller purchase. Like, that's not a good customer experience. They should have a first party controller.
But I think it's not that different from a console experience. Like, look at the Wii, where if you want to play a multiplayer game, you have to go buy a second controller, or you had to buy a nunchuck add-on, or you had to buy some other weird thing. I think people tend to be okay with that. Well, I think it's not a great experience, but if this box now goes from being 150 US to 200 US starting, and like for me to buy mine was like almost $400 Canadian with a controller, like now we're looking at, why don't I just buy an Xbox?
Yeah, but okay. A couple things. So the controller thing, not having it bundled would be different from every game, other game console. So then you're not really a game console. You're an entertainment device.
Which for half the people buying it, that might be the only case.
Then, and that's very true.
Why do they need a controller?
If you're one of the customers who's buying it and expecting to play games, then it's not going to play. And then you find out it doesn't play the games that you want. Then that's a little frustrating.
But it does play the games you want. You just need to go buy a controller.
But that is, it didn't come in the box, is my point.
I don't think that's a reasonable argument for the type of device it is.
Well, they want to position it as both a games device and an entertainment streaming media device. So they should support both. If they don't want to position it as both, if they just want to do one or the other, then they should position it as one or the other. I feel like it is not hitting, it is not striking the right balance right now with the inclusion of the Siri remote and no real viable option for most of the games other than buying a third party that can't be required. So then those people must use the inferior Siri remote experience.
But now there's two issues in there, which is, one, does it come with a remote? And the other, do they force the requirement of a remote? Because even if they bundled a controller, that doesn't change the issue of, can you force a controller? They're two separate issues.
But if it was bundled, then you could force the issue. I mean, they're not going to bundle it now.
Even if it's third party, you could force the issue.
I know, but then there's it's not there in your force. You're telling people they need to go do something else. And which is something they're doing it only for one game, for Guitar Hero. That's the only one.
And I think this is one that they're going to change, because the quality of games that can be built with the frameworks they have, with the processor they have, you can build really cool stuff. It's limited by input. They're going to hit that wall really, really quick. But I think that's more of an App Store support issue than a should this be bundled with the device issue.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's too late to bundle it now because it's done. The software, sure, you can do that later, but it's too late to bundle now. The problem with the but you know, at the outset, I would have prioritized shipping both of them if it was supposed to be both. And they put a lot of money into that Siri remote, which is mind-boggling to me, but there it is. And like, even the distinction between storage tiers, like, they're more than willing to charge you slightly more money for a different storage tier. So why not charge you more money for one that includes a game controller?
Because I think Johnny Ive probably feels they can't make a really good game controller.
Well, I feel like Johnny Ive can't make a good game controller. sick burn, Johnny Ive. But it couldn't be a horrible little rectangle thing. You'd have to design one of these things that fits in hands. So it's one of those.
But like, an Apple made bundled one doesn't solve the problem. It's just like, if they had to make two tiers where one comes with a controller, it's the same issue. Like, should this thing be more expensive? Should it always come with a controller for the 50% of people who are never going to use the controller? Does it just sit there? Why do I have a remote and a controller?
Like, well, I don't know where you got 50% from.
I'm just making it up. Like,
That was my implication with that question.
Yeah, but it's just for the sake of the conversation. Like, okay. If you have this device and it goes to your home and it has the stupid little Siri remote and a controller, which one do you use? If you're only going to use this to watch TV, or say you use it at an office, why do you need a game controller? You're going to have people in the enterprise saying, why did this come with a stupid game controller? I don't need this. They're all going to go live in a closet somewhere. The device is going to cost $50 more or $80 more for that entry point. It's going to change the amount of people who can buy it. If you then say, okay, we're going to only put the game controller in the higher tier with the more storage, that's fine. But now it's the exact same issue we have today where not everybody has the controller. So then can the App Store force it? So Apple bundling the controller doesn't really change the equation of should games be allowed to force a controller.
Okay, I want to talk about the expense issue, because you've pointed that out several times, that it'd be more expensive to include a controller. No one is saying that. One of the things that I had pointed out that I think everyone disagrees with me about is that the Siri remote is an added cost to the device, and they could have shipped a less expensive device if the Siri remote were dumbed down in some way. If it were not including all of the sensors that it has, if it were not a touch interface, if it were a D-pad and a microphone, like, then the device overall would be less expensive. And everyone disagrees with me on that one. They feel like it is so much better as it is right now than it would be if they had stripped out any of its functionality in order to achieve a lower price point. So I'm not sure the price argument really holds up. And people are more than willing to spend a lot of money on these things.
But it's and you're crossing a threshold.
No, but you're thinking of the threshold now that the device has shipped. Before the device shipped, we didn't know how much this was going to be. So if you think back to before, and all of a sudden they came out with something that was, you know, at $200 starting instead of at $160 starting, then you wouldn't have that comparison to say, oh, well, it's more expensive. You'd be in the same situation now where it's like, it's more expensive than the third gen, but no one is making that direct comparison saying, oh, well, it's too expensive now for that.
But the question isn't, is it like more expensive? It's what pricing bracket does it go into, and what implication does that have on the people buying it? Because going from, like, there's a psychological barrier of going from $149 to $199.
No, but see, that's the thing, is like, I'm saying that psychological barrier didn't exist before the device shipped. Now it exists.
No, that barrier existed before, because there's pricing tiers of, like, if you get this under $99, X amount of people will buy it. If you get it under $149, X amount will buy it. If it's over $200, X will buy it.
Yeah.
But there's actual math behind all of that, and coming to the conclusion of what is the minimum price that we should charge for this is why they decided to include the Siri remote, or whether they would include a bundled controller. And if they have to increase the price by $60 or $80, and that puts it up to a $229 base price, that changes the floor of who the minimum buyer for the product will be. It changes the amount of people who will reach it. It changes the evaluation criteria of, do I buy this for everyone in my office? Do I buy this for all my friends and family? Or do I just buy one because it's like a console? It really changes the comparison.
Yeah, but here's the thing, is like, if that were the case, if it was that, then it's the decision Apple's making to set the price tier, because they're already setting a price tier that is more than double what the first device was. So they know there's a psychological barrier to even that, but they're fine with it. And they know there's a psychological barrier to the 32 gigabyte versus the 64, but they're fine with that too. So then it's like, well, if you made this a full-fledged gaming console where there were controllers and they were bundled with it, and it was treated as if it were a gaming console and an entertainment device, then would that not be worth the extra money to do that up front? Right now, what you have is a device that ships where you're going to wind up wanting to buy a third-party controller. The developers are going to have to build in Siri remote support for things that they shouldn't have to. And I feel like it makes everyone unhappy. I don't feel like that cost benefit there of saving money by not including a controller, I don't feel like that part of it is worth it at all. Because you went out and bought a SteelSeries Nimbus controller.
I had no issue doing that because I knew I wanted to play games on it.
I know, never mind. We're not gonna agree on this. And it's a moot point. Like,
thing that has two jobs. It has to be a streaming device and it has to be a game console. And if you ship it as a game console, it prevents all the people who just want a streaming device from buying it because it's way more expensive than any other streaming device. Whereas right now it's somewhat more expensive than any other streaming device. For the people who want it to be a game console, they have the option to buy a controller. Whether they can actually use that controller to its full potential is a separate argument. But the people who actually want to use it for games will go out and buy a game controller.
Okay, so let's move on. Should we talk about the interface or App Store?
App Store it's a quick one. It's not done. It's hard to find anything. It's hard to find anything because there's no categories.
I know. I have two categories. I have two categories. I have games and entertainment.
Really?
Yes.
Are those new?
They were new this week. They didn't ship with the device. I find the category distinction laughable because that's two things.
I don't have those.
Okay. Well, maybe it's just a US thing. I think I read somewhere that it's dependent on where you are for categories and for top charts. I don't feel like this app store executes well, because I think the primary way that most people get to app stores is through links, and you can't do that at all on anything. Even on an iOS or Mac device, there's no page you can navigate to purchase something like with your Apple ID, and then it materializes in your purchase history on your device. It's not a possibility. You can redeem codes for trials through iTunes, and then it will show up in your purchase history on your device and you can download it. Like John Voorhees, who develops some iOS and now a tvOS app with his son Owen, they developed an app called King Me, and he gave me a trial code for it, and so I redeemed the code through iTunes and it showed up in my purchase history on my device. There's no way for me to have done something like that because purchasing it on my Mac or on an iOS device, because that's not possible. And John couldn't have sent me a link to his page or anything. You know how even if you're not on a Mac or an iOS device and you get a web link, you'll go to the web page for something in the iTunes store. That doesn't even exist for TV. There's no RSS feed of different apps. There's nothing. So there's no discoverability. There are no ways to figure out what's inside the store or to buy anything without knowing what it is and remembering to search for it. And then after entering the text and finding it, downloading it. And some apps have taken advantage of this, like all the 2048 clones, the game 2048, however you want to refer to it. There are I think over 20 of those clones now. And they're all.
And that's kind of funny because it itself is a clone.
Yeah, so it's entertaining. It's entertaining that it's sort of a problem that's been solved on every other Apple platform, but not on the TV platform. Even though it's sharing the same store backend, it's still iTunes back there. You can't expose it on the other platforms and buy it, and you can't share anything to your TV. So
yeah,
there's no way
to get it. That's what makes me bullish about the TV being successful, because Apple has all the infrastructure in place already to fix these issues. They just haven't gotten there yet. And the question is it because they don't see that as a problem, or they are just spread too thin? And my hope is that they're going to be able to fix this stuff either with being able to buy TV apps on your phone or your Mac, or using something like AirDrop to send a link from Twitter to your TV. I think they have the technology to do it. They just didn't get there yet.
which is troubling to me because this device.
But it's a 1.0.
But it's a device that's been in development for years. So,
but we don't actually know that. It's been rumored for years. We don't know how much time actually went into this actual version of the OS. For all we know, it could have been 15 people.
Well, I don't care how my criticism is not the number of man hours that went into it. My criticism is the number of time that has elapsed. And that is a management issue. If they are not putting people on something and then launching this category,
at the same time, from a software development point of view, there's only so much you can reliably ship at once. And if you want to say this didn't ship with all the usable features, look at every device they've ever shipped as a 1.0. Like the iPhone had no app store, didn't have copy and paste.
Okay, well, no, but I disagree with that because tvOS not having copy and paste. Okay, fine, whatever.
No, you're doing a literal comparison. It's saying the iPhone shipped with hugely like massive features that everybody in all the blogs made fun of for like 2 years, that the iPhone has no copy and paste. And it was like a big press release when it did have copy and paste. And it's one of those things when you're like, how does a computing device not have that? But it was still a successful device and they got there over time.
No, but that's a UI paradigm. I'm not talking about a UI paradigm. Storefront is a solved problem. Like you can buy things. I can buy an iOS app on my Mac. The storefront that's something that they have fixed. I'm not lambasting them for copy and paste support on tvOS. I don't care about that. Like whether or not that ever exists
but
or materializes.
But it's not about copy and paste.
Years.
It's about their comfortable shipping devices that are missing critical features and they fix those over time. And this is a device they launched that's missing critical features. And the hope is, looking back at their history, they will fix those over time.
Okay, well, I hope that they figure out that people would like to buy apps on their thing where they said the future of TV is apps, because that would be important, I would think, to them. Right now, it seems like the most important part of this platform is that you can get apps from people who they feel have made really great things from certain publishers and selected and featured on a certain page.
I think the most important part of their platform is that they got it out.
I really appreciate that they ship something and I'm really looking forward to where it's going to go. But again, I have to point to the calendar time that has elapsed and they squandered it. If this is the 1.0 that they shipped, from the last TV that shipped, it has been a long time. So it is very strange to me that management resources were not allocated to work on this, especially for things where we're looking at lapses, where part of the platform kind of hinges on it working. And I'm specifically talking about like app sales and ways to drive people to buy things on the platform. Like they went through a lot of trouble to make sure that you could integrate iOS and tvOS apps so that there is a build of it. I looked this up later. It's not a true universal binary, but there is a build of it basically for like if you have the CBS app on your iPhone and then you'll see it in your purchase history on the TV. And so you download that TVML version of the CBS app. And so they went through a lot of trouble for that. And I really like that. And that is the power of the iTunes store and the developer environment. They're able to do that, but not being able to share a link to something, not being able to purchase it on another device, having to search for everything manually yourself that's not right.
But would you rather have it where you have to do that yourself today? Or would you rather have it where it has links to the app stores next March?
I just don't view that as a valid comparison because
that's the thing they're grappling with internally. It's, do we release this as is? Is this usable? Does it solve the problem? Can people do the things they want to do with it? Or do we have to delay? And in 6 months, we're going to be able to do this. There's only so much one company can do at a time. And Apple is spread very, very thin.
Yeah. Okay. But that doesn't make any sense because then they would never ship anything. Cause like
always have to ship something. You have to say, this is the minimum bar of the product we're going to ship. We think this is useful. We know it's missing these 25 things, but we can't say that but we're going to work on those. The alternative is we wait until we finish those 25 things and release it then. So do you want the Apple TV as it is now, or do you want it as it's going to be 6 months from now?
But that's not a valid comparison because...
It is, because those are the two options in reality that they would have discussed. They would have said, do we ship this now or do we ship this in March when everything for the App Store is in place?
But then they would never ship anything. That's not the point. I'm not criticizing minimum viable product.
That's the management issue you're talking about. It's how do we manage our people and resources? How do we decide how much gets done and what point we ship?
Yeah, but they did it wrong is my criticism. Not that. Okay.
Like you're saying, their internal project management was wrong.
They spent all of this time, and you're saying that it's fine to ship this.
We don't know that they spent all that time.
But they had the time to spend, and whether or not they spent it is a management problem.
But they chose to spend it somewhere else. They chose to build a watch. Maybe they're choosing to put all their great people on the car.
Okay, well, that's a problem. Do you not agree that that is a problem to ship things that are not ready to ship because you're constantly on a schedule where you can't meet your deadlines?
And that's why I'm saying they're spread too thin. They're trying to ship too much.
Okay, so that's a problem. So what? I don't understand.
Would you rather have it now, or would you rather have it in another 6 months where it solves all the issues like keyboard support in the App Store? That's the compromise they have to make. If they want to do all of the things they're doing, like build an iPad Pro, build an Apple Watch, build a car, like they have to decide where those resources go. And do they decide we're going to get the Apple TV out before the holiday and it's going to have compromises, or we're going to get it out next year? That's the question. And I know we've talked about this privately of, did they ship it too soon? And I think the only way you can judge that is if by shipping it now, it has mortally wounded the prospects of the platform in like a .me caliber fashion where they would have to relaunch it entirely again. And I don't think it's that bad.
But I view it as something where they could have launched something and had big fanfare and an amazing reception, and that it changed the future of TV. Like they said it did. Do you not remember them saying this?
Yeah, and I think it's going to get there. It's just it's not there yet.
That's not how they pitch their TV.
But that's marketing.
Okay, well, but then we're back to the issue of what is Apple if it is like going to say all of these big blustery things and then not deliver.
But they've always kind of done that. Like everybody loved the iPhone because it did new things. But it took a while to lead up to the vision of what everyone was excited about. They saw, this is an awesome computer in my pocket. It's really slow. It doesn't have apps. But in the future, it's going to do all these really cool things. And that's why everyone gravitated to that platform and why it started growing over time, because it showed a new way of doing this stuff. The Apple TV has that. It's just missing components. Those components need to get put into place. And I think like this comes back to the whole thing of, why is everyone up in arms about the criticism of it? Or why is there so much negative criticism? It's because it's almost there, but it's a brand new thing and it takes time to put all the other stuff in place to support it. And I'm not saying that they deserve our sympathy for that. I'm just saying it's something we need to think about.
I'm completely on the opposite end of the spectrum because their internal product planning is not my problem. Their ability to ship things and say that they're shippable, and then I receive them and then they don't appear to be in the condition that I would expect. They've not properly set my expectations.
But what part of it isn't shippable? Which we haven't gotten into all of my bugs and that's a separate issue. But like what part for you hasn't been shippable?
Okay, maybe not shippable is extremely hyperbolic on my part. Okay.
But that's the argument you're making. You're saying, I don't want this in my house now. I want it in my house in March.
I really wish you would stop saying March, because that's just pulling a number out of thin air, because we have no idea how long it will take them to actually develop any of these features.
It's not about development. It's about market release cycles. They release this in October because that's the last time they can push it out before people buy stuff for the holidays. The soonest they could release it after that would probably be mid-February, but it would likely be March.
I'm not talking about hardware changes. I'm just talking about software. They could change the software in January for all we know.
I know, but you're saying they shouldn't have shipped this device because it's not doing the things I expect it to. So it's, when could they have shipped it in a commercially viable time based on the calendar? It could be all of these issues are going to be fixed in software in December, but you know what? We can't ship in December because Christmas is in 2 weeks and that's a really stupid time to ship something.
You're right. I feel terrible for them. These poor people trying to ship things in time for the holidays so they can sell so many. I none of these are my concern. My concern is that I wanted this to be better, and it is not better than what my expectations of it were.
And that's fine, but the way it could have been better, like...
Don't say that it will be like in the future or something, because that's just going to make me mad at this point. Like, of course it'll be better in the future, but like everything will be better in the future. So it's not even like whatever. I
think part of our disagreements come with you judge things based on how they are in the here and now. And I'm looking at how is it going to be over the life cycle that I own the device?
Okay. Well, I'm sure it will be better over the life cycle of the device, because all Apple products will improve over the life cycle of the device, except for that part where they dip at the very end when they're supporting software for the next iteration of products that replaces them.
I love that part.
Yeah, that's a cool phase. But we're not there yet. And we won't be there conceivably for a couple years at least. So that is what it is. It is just a collective disappointment on my part. And it is something that you can look forward to, an experience of opening little tiny packages for the rest of the year. An advent calendar of tvOS.
Yeah, Apple feels like an advent calendar some days. Mm-hmm. It's like there's a new iPhone, there's a new iPad, there's a new TV.
Yeah, I mean, the compressed timescale of which they launched everything this fall is bananas.
Oh, yeah, that was ridiculous.
I mean, I think that honestly probably is part of the problem, especially considering the supply issues and everything with all the devices.
Part of it, too, is their growth. Like, they have to have that growth now, and I think a lot of that is driving it. Like, from a shareholder perspective, like, the second Apple doesn't have a mega growth quarter, people are going to be up in arms, and... that's going to be interesting when it happens. And that's why they're just throwing so much new product in the pipeline. And it arguably is at the expense of customer satisfaction, because there's a lot more negative Apple talk lately than happy Apple talk. And I don't know if they see that coming.
Well, I'm sure customer sat is foremost on someone's mind. But let's move on to something else, which is 4K support. I didn't touch on this at all on Upgrade, but it's worth repeating, I guess, that I think 4K support is overrated right now on this generation of devices, considering that most people don't have an entire home theater setup that can really take advantage of it at this moment, and that most movie studios don't have giant catalogs full of 4K content because most of it wasn't made that way. And we're not going to really see that take off for a couple years yet. So people that are disappointed that Apple doesn't have 4K support, but the cheaper Roku and cheaper Amazon Fire both support 4K, I would just point out that there's not much 4K. So just cool your jets there, people.
Yeah, I don't really have anything to add on 4K.
And there's the whole thing of there are competing standards about how to specify brightness and color. It's a whole nother topic, but there's a little tiny war brewing with those standards between like Dolby and Technicolor and whatever. It's not set in stone. It is in flux, and even the 4K that you think you're getting, like you're getting like 4K sRGB, it's not the amazing future that you're going to experience Once they normalize all that stuff, it's like early HD right now is basically the phase we're in. Remember when everything was switching over from SD to HD and there were like two HD channels and like most of the time they would just show things that were like scaled up from SD.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of the phase we're in right now. So no one really persecute Apple for that one. I don't really persecute them for that. I don't think that's an issue at all.
Yeah. I think, games are going to get to 4K more commonly faster than content will. And I think that's going to be the interesting push.
Well, that'll be interesting. I wouldn't have necessarily predicted that, but maybe, cause it's four times the number of pixels they need to push and they have a hard time pushing the number of pixels they have now, but we'll see what happens.
Well, yeah. But look at like the iPad Pro benchmarks. It seems to be doing fairly well and that's a very high resolution display.
Yeah. And it's a possibility
in 2 years, if that A9X can go into the Apple TV at a reasonable price point, then why couldn't they have a 4K game console?
It's entirely possible. So I'm not ruling it out. But I'm just not making the prediction. You are. So ta-da.
Oh, I didn't say that's a prediction. I just think
prognosticator Marco is trying to take it back. All right. So
I think it could happen. I think it's an interesting thing to discuss.
Okay. And so let's move on. We've discussed the major criticisms, the remote, the UI, the App Store, and the we kind of discussed the UI when we were discussing the other things. So no one think that they missed part of this. 4K all being the major criticisms. So let's discuss your specific bugs that you've been experiencing. And there have been a few people who have had buggy Apple TV experiences. I have had software related issues with certain games, but I haven't had like platform issues, and you've had platform issues. And I know Bradley Chambers on Twitter had some platform issues he had contacted Apple about, and he has multiple Apple TVs in his home. So if you're looking for an Apple TV fan, it would be him. He was only experiencing issues with one of his consoles. And I guess it's nice to have that sort of like sampling environment. And you only have one, so you were experiencing issues with yours.
Yeah. And mine is, most likely software related. Maybe it's the processor is janky, but I have things like I load a game, the game crashes. Specifically on like download loading screens, it will crash. Happened in the Disney game and in Beat Sports. I've had issues where the entire console just restarts in the middle of watching Netflix. I've had issues where I start playing music and there's no audio. Then I restart the Apple TV and then Apple Music went away. Then I restarted the Apple TV and Apple Music came back. I've had games just randomly quit and go back to the home screen, and it's not predictable. It's not like Alto's Adventure or Crossy Road is broken. It's just at any point, they all just kind of die. When I add a new Bluetooth controller, the system just turns off sometimes. I had it be where the Siri remote stopped working. Then I turned on the Nimbus controller. Then the entire system crashed, and then it turned back on, and then they both worked. And it's just like really weird stability issues. And I don't know if it's software or if I just have a bad box.
I think you had said on Twitter that you were going to try reaching out to Apple. Have you done that yet?
No, I haven't had time yet. Plus, I've been to the Apple Store for like every device, and it's too much Apple Store.
I think you're cursed, is still my opinion.
It's literally every device has been replaced this year.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, at least you didn't drop this one yet. But there's still the remote. You didn't shatter this one yet.
Yeah.
There's still time. So keep working on that through December. I haven't had those experiences except for, I would say, the Disney Infinity game. I'm not sure if it's the game that's buggy or if it's the sideloading framework. App slicing framework, where it's trying to pull down content on the fly. I don't know if that is the buggy part. I'll wait and see.
That experience is so painfully awful.
Yeah.
Like, so you download the Disney Infinity game. That takes a little bit. You launch it and then you can't do anything. And it's just says downloading content. And then the same thing for Beat Sports and a couple other games. And there's no visible ability into how long it will take, how much data it's downloading. It just blocks you. There's no sense of, if I leave this app, will it continue this in the background? So then I just leave the app running. It's just the app slicing thing. I don't know if it's Apple's fault or the developers implementing it very poorly, but it's not good.
Well, I think there are two problems. The bugginess of it might be the developer's fault and it might be Apple's fault. The other part of it where you have to do it at all after the initial download, I think is a bigger issue. Apple should have a minimum viable playable game download where it downloads that. What was the maximum? 200 megabytes on the initial download, and then it's up to 2 gigabytes of storage on the device per game that can be dynamically loaded. And so what happens is it downloads that first 200 megabytes and then you open it and then it's like, nope, I need all this other stuff. And I think that part, the I need all this other stuff before you can do anything, that part is unpleasant. And I feel like that is a platform issue that Apple should address. And they should have something where you can start playing after you get it. It's not like you download it and then open it up and then start playing. And then it's like you reach a point where it buffers and like loads a level or something. That does not happen. You just can't do anything at all with the current way that app slicing is working. I really wish they would. I wish they would alter that mechanic. And you, as far as I can tell, you can hit the home button, not the menu button, because it won't take you back to the home screen. But if you hit the home button, you'll be able to go around and do other stuff, and it will work in the background, sort of. Except I couldn't tell if this was actually true or not, because Disney Infinity, when I went the other day, I tried to open it again. And it seemed to want to download everything from scratch all over again, Even though all I ever had was the Battle of Yavin. So I don't know if maybe they had updated the game on the App Store and it had triggered a re-download of all the cached assets or something. I have no clue what happened, but it felt like it needed to download the whole thing over again. And it
does
just
that
hung.
Every time. It's that game is the worst.
I feel bad for whatever parents are going to have to deal with kids who got that for their Apple TVs, because hopefully you guys bought it for other platforms, because this one is not good.
Yeah. The other thing with the app slicing stuff is if they need a component right away, like why can't Apple just like download the app, instantly start a background download of that first package so that I know like the app isn't installed until it's installed that first thing.
Yeah. Well, maybe if you wait till March.
One can hope.
Zing.
I'm okay with that as long as they're going to fix it. As long as they're going to fix it, I'm good.
Okay.
If they're not going to fix it, then I'm like, well, I'm going to go buy an Xbox.
Oh. Look at you. Leveraging your anger. Anger into platforms.
The fear leads to anger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anger leads to Apple TV.
So I don't view it as a, those are the only really bugs that I've had, except AirPlay. And I can't tell if it's a bug or it's just like some demo mode somebody left on by accident. But, if you start playing audio on an iOS device over AirPlay to your TV, and then you open up like the Photos app, it will override, whatever settings you have and kick into AirPlay mirroring. And start showing the photos on the TV and kill the audio stream.
Oh, that sucks.
And if it's the music app, the audio stream will be killed and then restart. And if it's Overcast, the audio stream just dies. And you have to open up Overcast again in order to get that back. But then if you open up Photos again, it just does it again. Because in that mirroring override, like you can tell that it's, if you load up the AirPlay options screen, your mirroring will be toggled off before you open Photos, and then you open Photos and then it's toggled on, and it's like, how did that happen? I didn't change anything other than opening Photos. Like, I didn't ask you to mirror my photos. So who knows where the fault in that lies, but I find that unpleasant. And when it was happening, I was experiencing I don't know if you've ever had this where the number of network instances of my Apple TV was incrementing in parentheses, because that's always fun.
Yeah, I love being able to AirPlay from my Apple TV to my Apple TV.
Yeah, That's not how that works. So I had hoped that that would mostly be either better than the previous experience or, I just wasn't expecting it to be quite as incomplete, because AirPlay seems like it's a major thing that people buy Apple TVs for. Yeah. You know?
All the offices we go to whenever we meet with customers, they all have Apple TVs in their boardroom, and everyone just AirPlays to the Apple TV.
For like AirPlay mirroring from their MacBooks and stuff?
Yeah. So like anytime we go do a presentation, they're just like, get on the guest Wi-Fi, use the Apple TV, enter the password. Like, it's really interesting how many people have this setup.
Yeah. And that brings up another thing. Maybe we can get to it when we talk about the future of Apple TV. I don't know if you're ready to go into that or if you have some more bugs to delve into.
No, and we should probably wrap up soon too.
Yeah. So very briefly, future of Apple TV. This is something that I know that you disagree about because we've talked about it before, but I'm bringing it up because you just talked about the AirPlay, is that maybe, just maybe, they should have a lower end AirPlay experience, entry level thing. That will replace the $69 aging box as it goes out the door. Either all it does is AirPlay, or it does AirPlay and a set of pre-baked entertainment apps and no games or whatever. But I feel like, especially for offices and boardrooms and classrooms and all the other applications where people bought it as a cheap, inexpensive way to mirror stuff, that the price difference between the previous iteration and the new one might make it prohibitively expensive for the new Apple TV to be used in boardrooms and stuff. That maybe it would be nice if they had like a little entry level one, and then it would also compete potentially with other little entry level devices from other companies. But yeah. I know that you disagree with me on this because you feel like it's too confusing for customers.
Well, it comes back to the thing, is this a streaming box or a game console? And they're trying to make it an app console. And if you're saying we're going to have an Apple TV mini, it's going to be a little dongle. It's $50. It does AirPlay and it does streaming. Well, now you have to define the difference between streaming and gaming. And does it have the App Store? And that's a really weird and confusing line for the consumer. And I like, you want Apple to compete at the low end. Apple never competes at the low end. If they do that, it's going to be, next year there's a new Apple TV and this one's $99, and then the year after it's $69, and it just goes down the food chain and there's a new version every year.
Yeah, and this is where I disagree. And I don't mean compete on the low end. I'm not talking about it needs to be the cheapest streaming device that's ever been made. I'm just saying
it has to compete with the Fire Stick.
Well, not necessarily with the Fire Stick. It'd still be $10-$20 more expensive than the Fire Stick. It doesn't need to be the Fire Stick price.
But it's still $100 cheaper than it is now.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like there's an enormous price difference between the Apple TV and the less expensive streaming devices. And especially if Apple is interested in entering the over-the-top service market, where they offer a bundle of, you know, channels or whatever, then it seems that it would make more sense for them to have a lower entry point than what they currently have with the very expensive device that they ship.
Right. But the question is, how do you segment the hardware and software platforms for that? It's easy to say like, hey, they should have a entry level thing that is just lighter weight. But what are the implications to the rest of the ecosystem for that? Is it only Apple services? Is it just like the old Apple TV? If it doesn't have the App Store, is that okay? If it doesn't have the App Store, but all I want to be able to do is look at Airbnb locations on my TV, is that not super frustrating? How much storage does it have? There's all these weird rabbit holes you go into of why an Apple TV mini would be an entirely separate product category with a separate UI and all the limitations that the Apple TV 3 had.
Well, there are a couple things. Like, they're currently shipping the Apple TV 3, third generation. They still have it for sale. Depending on what stores you walk into, it might or might not be on display at all. Especially with the third parties, and some of the third parties have discounted it. So I don't know if it's going to quickly be discontinued now that the fourth generation has finally shipped. But they did make a big deal about starting at $69.99 last March when they had the HBO event. So I'm not sure, and I don't have the answers for this, and I don't know what storage solution would be correct, or if there would be a storage solution at all, if it would ship with a set amount of storage like the other one did, and there would be no storage management. I don't know if it would ship with storage and have exactly the same interface, only you only had access to the entertainment category of the App Store and no access to the games category. I have no idea what the restrictions would be. I don't know what processor they would put in it. I don't know what remote they would have. This is a pie in the sky kind of thing.
Yeah. I'm just saying it. Once you start answering those questions, it gets really, really confusing. And it comes, I think it would come down to, are we talking about making a smaller third generation Apple TV? And would you rather them spend the industrial design, manufacturing, and software effort to make that thing happen, and you can buy that for $69 next year? Or would you rather they try to reduce the cost of the new Apple TV and have that be $99 next year?
But I don't see that trade-off necessarily, because
But you have to think those are the discussions they're having.
I'm sure that they're having these discussions. I'm sure they're having far more complicated discussions than we're going to get into on this podcast. But I would like to see something in the space that is there financially, that bracket, if you will, of sub $160, and accomplishing some of the features that people might need, but not need a full-blown Apple TV solution for right now. Now, maybe this isn't really an issue. Maybe, like you're saying, we can do away with a third gen and the price is reset, and that we go through another year and then this one just notches down $50 or whatever, increments down. And then at $99, they can start selling these to businesses or what have you, and the following year they do the same thing. Like that could very easily be the case, and that might be the discussion they're having. But I think there is still room for like an AirPlay Express, as Jason Snell said on an episode of Clockwise. Like I think that's still a possibility, but I'll leave that at that. In terms of the future of the Apple TV fourth generation that we currently have, we should probably discuss that, because that's a little less nebulous and wishy-washy. I really hope that we see ways to share not only to the TV, but from the TV, that if you are there should ideally be a way to share what you're watching. There should be a way to bookmark things for watching on other devices without using a third party service.
Like handoff
to do it. What?
Handoff.
Yeah. Like there should be a way to have a single sign on for many of these services, and whether or not that is the OTT service, as it might be, like maybe Apple's solution for the entertainment bundle is that they just bundle all your single sign on stuff themselves, or whether it's another solution where your credentials are actually saved using iCloud Keychain between your iOS and Mac and TV. That would be nice. In terms of controlling the device, I would really like to see them invest time and effort in a remote app. I don't know if they currently are or not. The answer that Jason Snell got when he asked somebody about it was a no. So I don't know if that's still the case, because that was like back in September that he asked them. I did not love the previous remote app, and so no, I would not want to see that updated. But I feel like there is an input gap that can be addressed, where my iPhone has a microphone, all of the sensors, et cetera, that the remote has, and it has a display on it, and a better virtual keyboard. So I don't know why we can't take advantage of that. It seems like something that I would hope is a no-brainer and that they are going to put some effort into, especially since they put effort into using your iOS device as a controller for some games. So that's a framework that exists. And every third party can implement their own solution for that and their own solution for that connection. So like when you open Crossy Road and you have to click through the options and then you use it as an iOS controller.
Oh, that's the worst.
I don't know why exactly that's so clunky. I feel like it should be more seamless.
So like one of the big things I have to fix is understanding which controller is on which input. Because when you're playing multiplayer Crossy Road and you have an iPhone, a Nimbus, and a Siri remote, each of those three devices can play controller one or play controller two. And you can have three controlling the same character at the same time and the other player doesn't exist. And it's really confusing.
Yeah. Well, they also need to fix the number of input devices because
you can have temporary limitation because I've had like the Siri remote, the Nimbus remote, and two iPhones connected at the same time.
Okay. Well, we'll see what happens. But right now, I know that you can have the Siri remote and two MFI controllers connected. And I have not experimented with what the capacity is for that and iOS devices. I haven't seen anybody document that, but it's not seamless. And I think that the iOS devices should connect seamlessly. That would be nice in the future. I know that I don't expect that to have been something that they shipped with, but it would be nice to have.
Yeah. I want the App Store to get better for discoverability. I think they need some sort of handoff or airdrop-like system. I think they need to enable games to be built that only support the MFI controller. That just has to happen. I think it's just general platform stability I'd like to see, and Siri needs to be everywhere. Like, it's embarrassing that Siri isn't connected to Apple Music.
Oh, for listeners who aren't familiar, who haven't played with this, Siri on the Apple TV does not respond to all the same commands as Siri on your phone. And so that is weird.
Yeah.
And Siri on your phone doesn't do what Siri on the TV does. So,
and that's one of those things where like you can guess that they're probably going to get there fairly quickly, but they must be embarrassed that it doesn't do that.
Yeah, I'm embarrassed because it seems very strange. I mean, it's also weird too that they went through the trouble of giving it the same sort of graphical touch as iOS 9 in terms of the colorful little waveform, but it's not the same, and it has the same name, but it's doesn't respond to you the same way. And I actually don't enjoy holding down on the Siri button in order to speak into it to do stuff, because that's not how I use it on my phone. And so it's weird because I keep pushing it and then forgetting to hold it down to long enough to say what it is. So then I just push it, say it, and then go, oh yeah, it doesn't have any idea that it said anything.
Oh, you don't have to hold it down. You just have to push it.
No, I've had to hold it down.
Hey Siri, is Joe wrong? No. I just push it and then it starts listening.
On your TV?
Oh, no, I'm wrong. The little waveform was moving, so I thought it was listening.
No, it's not. It just does that.
Yeah, it says hold to speak. You're right.
Yes.
Yeah. You can edit that part out so I sound so much less dumb.
No, I'm leaving that in.
Well, I figured you would.
So... Well, after all of the ribbing you're giving me, you want me to take that out. All right. So anyway,
Siri... I think maybe an interesting way to end this is, are you bullish on the future of it, or do you think there's just so much that still needs to be refined that you're still out on giving a verdict?
I think it is not possible to give a firm verdict about what this is going to be in the future, because there is so much of it that can change through software, and I have no idea what their plans are for when they want to release any of the software changes. That uncertainty, however, makes it hard to recommend the device for certain categories of customers, which treat their devices more like appliances. So I am hopeful for the future of this. I don't feel like it has the current fit and finish that some other customers might expect.
Yeah, I think I'm mostly in the same camp. I'm really bullish on the future. I think it's definitely going to live up to the marketing hype. I just don't know if that's going to take 6 months or 2 years for them to get there. There's people I want to buy one for, like my dad, but I think it's not stable enough for that yet.
Yeah, I mean,
I think it's going to get there.
Think about all the difficulties you're having and then give it to your dad. I mean,
oh, yeah, he'd throw the remote at the window and then it would crack because it's made of glass.
Yeah, and the window too, but the so glass. How does it work? I think our negativity about the current status of it, and I say ours loosely because I know that you're not as negative, except for your specific bugs. I think that future potential, exists still in spite of that, and that it is very conceivable that there can be a complete turnaround on this, and that we're all completely, every single one of us that has criticized it is in love with it in a certain time frame. I just have no idea what it'll be. A lot of that might be tied to content. A lot of that might be tied to game controller adjustments. A lot of that might be in terms of requirements. A lot of that might be tied to app store discoverability. Who knows what will unfold exactly that'll make us love it. And I'd be very curious to keep checking in on how this is doing and sort of gauge the temperature of how well it's received over time. I think there's so much that can be done in this product category for Apple or other companies that I feel like it is ripe for people to pursue. So
here's another question to think about. How often have you been using it this week?
I'm almost never at my apartment and I'm working 10 hour days, so not much. Okay. But I use it for, well, no, but I do use it whenever I'm here. I use it because I'm watching everything on it, and I don't have my third generation plugged in. I don't use it for anything. I don't turn it on for anything. I don't watch anything on my iOS device that I can watch on my TV. I mean, because other than short like YouTube clips or whatever that are linked to off of Twitter, I mean, there's no point in firing up AirPlay for that. But the we're in the middle of, well, slightly past the middle of we were doing Star Wars, the original trilogy of them, and now we might go into the prequels, so we see how that goes on Defocused. And I didn't want to even get my DVDs out, so I just bought it again on iTunes for $100. So that lets you know that the ecosystem's sort of viable. And, you know, I was watching on there, and I only had it buffer one time catastrophically in the middle of the title crawl for Empire Strikes Back, and I was just like, this is really takes the drama out of this moment. But the it is fine, especially if you're watching iTunes content. I think that it's good. It's even better, I would argue, than the previous one. And I certainly haven't experienced the kind of degraded video that I've noticed on the third generation for Netflix streaming. I see some degraded ads that appear, like if you use Crackle. I was testing with Crackle. And that has, like, I don't know, 240p ads that they blow up over your whole screen. And they're like ads that you'd find on like IGN or something, where it's like football games or whatever. So that's weird. But those ads were degraded. But the video quality, I think, has been better than, I would say, DirecTV satellite video quality is for HD. So that is, you know, not... that is not a little task to accomplish. And I wonder how much of that is the special CDN that Apple has been putting all that money into. I don't know who's tapping into that or if they have like certain interchange deals or whatever, but it seems good in a way that I feel like my third gen wasn't. And I don't know why that would be if it was the content delivery network, but maybe they only turned it on for the fourth gen. It's subsidized purely on fourth gen sales. But
that's where the extra $100 goes.
Yeah, I know. I have no idea. It just feels smoother and better than the third one for just watching things that I already own or have on Netflix. And I appreciate that.
Yeah. I like it. I use it every day. It makes me happy. Sometimes I just turn on the screensavers and look at them.
Yeah. Oh, the screensavers are gorgeous. Don't get me wrong. And no one has criticized the screensavers as being anything other than gorgeous.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying it's funny that that became one of my use cases.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think you're the only person that does that. I mean, when we were getting ready to record, I had my TV on, even though I knew I wasn't really going to use it for anything. And it was showing me like Golden Gate for like 10 minutes. But it's pretty look at. It's nice. And, you know, I know there's fireplace apps or whatever. And what I'm not particularly interested in those. But
there are so many. So many fireplaces.
Well, what are you going to do? I mean, it's a TV.
Next time it would be really interesting to talk about the type of apps people are building and what we want to see, because what's out there right now is really, really funny to me.
I'm wondering how much of that is a byproduct of the amount of time people had to develop.
Well, when the iPad came out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, we need to cut this short. By short, I mean 2 hours.
Yes. So thank you very much, Marco, for talking to me. And I'm sorry I'm such an idiot and I'm the worst and I don't understand how 6 months makes such a difference, blah, 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 etc. It's still a joy talking to you.
We're going to look back on this in March and then see how much software Apple's released. It's going to be fun.
Yes. It's like a time capsule. Like it's a podcast. A pod capsule.
If only they called them that.
Pod capsules?
Yeah. Okay, bye.